This episode is brought to you by Get Group. Learn more about secure, ISO-compliant mobile driver's licenses and sign up for a demo at getgroupna.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the AnvaCast. I'm excited this week to welcome one of our most important international partners, the chairman of the Association of European Vehicle and Driver Registration Authorities, more commonly referred to as EREG, Survi Beckers. Survi, welcome to the AnvaCast. We're really excited to have you here.
Thank you, Ian. It's good to talk to you again.
You were gracious enough to join us early September for our virtual annual meeting. And then Anne and I logged in for your annual meeting that you also did virtually. How did that go for you guys? How did you feel about it?
I think we can look back on a really successful two meetings, actually. It was the EREG meeting, of course, our annual meeting that we had to do virtually now, and the UKERIS meeting, both in 1 week. That was stressful for the chairman, I can tell you that. For you, I mean, compared to AMVA, you have it all in one organization. We have the IT network and, say, the knowledge network separate from each other. But I happen to be the chair of both since last week. So that's news.
So you are chair of both EREG and UKERIS. I think for those folks that are listening, I think the closest comparison I could give them is, you know, before AMVA and AMVANET merged, and we were two separate entities, AMVANET being the network and AMVA being the association, EREG and UKERIS is fairly similar in EREG being the association of members discussing policy, best practices, and UKERIS being the IT network that connects European countries to each other.
Absolutely, that's correct. And it went very well, I must say. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the preparations you have to do, but you must have noticed the same for such a meeting. I mean, it's easier to have a live meeting actually than have digital ones, if you look at the amount of work that you have to put in. But on the other hand, I think looking back, with a lot of creativity and discipline, it actually worked. And we made our decisions. We even had a good workshop and discussions, something I was a bit fearful of, because how do you do this over video? And it worked out pretty well. We even had a pub quiz to do something about a social event. Mm-hmm. Because, like I noticed with AMVA as well, a big part of it is work and exchanging knowledge, but a big part is also being colleagues and being a family. And, you have to find ways to make up for that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. You had good participation in your online social event.
Pretty much. And we had quiz questions about UKERIS and EREG, of course. And I must say, a lot of those people were much more knowledgeable than I was on the subject.
You were already chair of EREG. Adding the chairmanship of UKERIS is the new piece that you're adding to your plate.
Yeah, exactly. It used to be, long ago, it used to be chaired by the Netherlands RDW as well. And then in the recent years, it was Germany who took over. But due to personal circumstances, that chairman had to step back. And then we were looking for somebody else. Didn't quite work out. But we felt we need to do something about, the future of the network anyway. And I thought that's quite a challenge. So let's throw myself in and see if the members want me. And they did. So that was good. But there's a lot of work ahead. That's for sure.
So let's talk about the work ahead for both groups. Let's start with EREG. What are kind of the big topics that are shared across the different European nations that you're trying to tackle in a common way? We talk about it a lot in North America about the different jurisdictions, whether it's US states or the Canadian provinces, having similar challenges. So trying to create common solutions. What mm-hmm. are the top topics that you're tackling there?
Yeah. What we do is every 3 years we make a new work program, basically that's the work program of the chair, because the chair is nominated for 3 years. And in this term, our focus areas are international data exchange, which makes sense for registration authorities. Although this is the first time that we are not just looking at the EU, but also globally. So that's why we're very happy to have an alliance with AMVA and with Osroads, and recently with Sheka as well. Because people are, well, in COVID times it's different, but they used to be traveling all over the world. The second one is the thing that's emerging, I think, is in-vehicle data. What we noticed is how much data cars store nowadays about everything, where they were, what happened, what the conditions of the car are, what the driver was doing. And still, we feel in Europe, there is a lot to think about where this data could be used for or should be used for, and what role the registration authorities should take. Because we feel that at some point, somewhere, people might actually approach us and say, hey, can you, and I don't know what the question will be, but it's definitely a topic. And we have to prepare for that. Then there is another important subject that we share among the members, is the innovation of government services. This is basically the products that we deliver to our citizens. And of course, every country does this in their own way. I think the EU is not that different from the States in the fact that everybody, every jurisdiction has its own law, has its own legal systems, has their own ways of doing things. But we noticed that by sharing our best practices and helping each other out, there is some sort of standardization developing in that way. So citizens can basically do services or check their services online in another country. And last but not least is, of course, the improvement of the registration processes itself. And this has to do with the fact that there is a lot of new data sources, there is new policy using data, and you know, you always have to worry about can we actually do this from an IT point of view, but also from a data protection point of view or a data quality point of view. And these are four topics that members actually focus on for these 3 years. And there is one extra, and that's the sustainability of the networks. That's ERedge and Eucaris as well. Because, like you said, I mean, we're growing networks. I already made a comparison once earlier to AMVA. You're the older brother, if not even more than that. If you look at the existence of the network, and well, we need to do something about the growth that we experienced over the last years. I mean, we are in existence for about 20 years. And at some point in time, you have to realize that you're not just a network of a few colleagues that wants to make the world better, but that actually people are relying on you. So we're in the middle of that, and we learn a lot from you.
Well, we're happy to help. It's rare Europe can look to us and say we're the older sibling of any nature. So that's kind of fun. One of the things that, you know, as you look to those topics here, we're always looking at that balance as to what is within a state or a Canadian province's authority versus what might be a federal national authority. Now over there, you're all nations that are coming together as opposed to a collection of states or provinces. However, there is a role that the European Union plays in an equivalency of shared standards. I'm not sure those of us that are listening in North America totally understand or appreciate how that balance works. So could you, as you look at some of these topics, particularly the sharing of data, you know, how much really is it within the control of each individual nation, and how much is influenced by, say, a directive of the European Union?
Yeah, well, that is actually very different per policy area. That's why I said I don't think the difference is that big if you compare states to the federal government that you have. Mm-hmm. European Commission makes European law in two ways. can be directives, or it can be law that is directly applicable. And they do that on the import and export of cars, free movement of goods, as we say. But they also do that on enforcement, and they also do that on road safety. All these things are covered by different DGs, and you can imagine that they sometimes have different ways of doing things as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is important to stress, though, is that ERAG is a European association. So we have more than just EU members. There are countries member of ERAG that are not within the EU, but are European. And this is a bit of a challenge every now and then, because some law is applicable for a part of our members because they're part of the EU treaty, and some law is not. I must say, in reality, most countries that are within our network, they actually follow the EU law.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on top. That's more like on a federal level, and they cover quite some topics. Environments and all the other things I know I just mentioned, road safety, data protection, all that stuff. Nevertheless, the countries themselves have their own legal systems, of course.
Sure.
Their own parliaments. And it is organized in this way that the EU Commission is the only one who can make EU law, but they don't make the decisions. The decisions are made by the countries. So in the end, to make the comparison, in your situation, all the states separately, the heads of states, should agree and vote on specific law that comes out. So that makes it hard to get new law, which makes it slow sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where we come in, because sometimes we can just, you know, give some practical advice about how this would work out in reality.
Sure.
Speeding up things or trying to solve some practical problems. Most of the time we don't touch the politics of things because that's not our job, but making it work is. So that's a difference. So in reality, the countries have actually a big say in the making of the EU, not in the making, but in the acceptance
Informing,
of the EU
yeah.
law.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Apart from that, we also have a European Parliament, which is also comparable, I think, which is the political side of the representation of the citizens, and they have a say as well. So basically, most of the time, three major stakeholders are involved: the member states, the European Commission, and the European Parliament. Also in our field of work, so that works exactly the same. And just to name something, how difficult it can be, the re-registration of cars from one country to another, which is from one state to another in your situation, is still something we didn't solve. Because the local tax systems and enforcement systems are still so different that countries couldn't agree. So we had a dossier going on for, years, but if they don't succeed to come to an agreement in, 8 years? I'm not quite sure about that. Then they have to restart the whole process from scratch again. And that's where we are now. The good thing, though, is that UCARIS was actually, this was one of the reasons for UCARIS to be started. Because the UCARIS treaty actually covers for this flaw, I would say, in European law. But that's a tricky tricky thing to say, of course, because not everybody might agree. But for citizens, it is difficult. If you go from one country to another and you have to re-register your car, that's still not very easy to do. Well, at least it can be done because the countries use UCARIS. But from an EU context, it's still not very well regulated.
Sure. So I want to go back. One of the topics that you mentioned, I've heard you talk about a lot, is this, the data sharing and international data sharing. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's already data being shared through the UCARIS network. expand on, are you looking to share different types of data, or is it a discussion, particularly a discussion that's happening in North America right now, is with different approaches to privacy and protection of data? You know, there's a lot of scrutiny around how you're sharing data, what data should be shared, and who should have access to it.
Yeah. We have exactly the same discussion. So this was this was the workshop of last week, for example, was about can other countries that we now call non-UCARIS countries, like you are, for example, can they connect to the UCARIS network? And how should this be done, taking into account data protection, privacy, differences in the management of data, all that kind of stuff. And I'm happy that we reached an agreement that we can actually now start to work on that. And so I think that's a good way forward for different types of data, because that was in your question as well. What we handle is almost everything that has to do with transport or vehicles, or so this could be import and export of cars, this could be exchanging driver license information, this could be a thing like e-call, for example, when a car hits a tree, the car phones the emergency services. Well, we deliver situational data on the specific vehicle, but it could also be the exchange of enforcement data for traffic fines, speeding, red lights, ignorance, that stuff, kind of stuff. And recently, we made big steps in the first registration of cars, where we used the certificate of conformity to basically enhance the data quality in all the registers in Europe. So that means that we have, we're setting up a system where the OEMs can directly deliver their data from the factory towards the registration authorities where they plan to sell their cars.
Is the OEMs having to do individual connections to each registration authority, or is that a case where you're somehow leveraging the UCARIS network for OEMs to do one connection and then it's being delivered to each registration authority?
Yeah, well, it's good you mentioned this. The UCARIS network is set up in a decentralized way, and that's on purpose. That has practical reasons, but also political ones. This architecture actually makes sure that no country rules over another. Everybody is completely equal. And this also reflects in something like this registration of certificates of conformity, because basically the OEM can choose what country he wants to deliver to. That's not up to us. That's a German factory might feel more comfortable to deliver to KBA in Germany, for example. Nevertheless, all the registration authorities are connected. So the data is available to all the European connected registration authorities. And that's the way we handle this. And well, for the IT specialist, it's a star network or a decentralized or distributed network, they have different advantages.
Sure.
And UCARIS really works for us because, well, it gives us a safe network with a lot of redundance, but also a way of basically keeping the interface to a minimum, keeping dependencies to a minimum, and at the same time have a maximum exchange of data to support all the processes that we want.
Yeah.
Which works. And now the OEMs are included as well, so they can deliver their data. And it's nice to, this is the link between UCARIS and ERAG. It is a topic group in ERAG who actually came forward with the standards, the data formats, and everything that should be used in this exchange. And they presented it to the European Commission, and they, luckily, took it over in their legislation. And then UCARIS is the one executing it. And that's how we work together between those two networks to make these kind of things work. And in this case, this was the first topic group where we actually had the OEMs on the table as well. So basically they talked with us about how we could get away from paper and make it digital. Because most countries, almost all, wanted this to happen because it saves money, it saves time, it improves the quality of service delivery, and so on and so on.
So the OEMs were just as excited and willing to jump in this type of project.
Yeah, I was amazed how much money they said they could save if they didn't have to really, I mean, crates of paper every month that they had to deliver. I mean, we're talking about millions of euros just to, you know, send a piece of paper to the right owner of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And now that can be done in seconds and easier. Yeah.
So talking of OEMs, one of the other topics that we've talked about in the past that we share and we're tackling emerging is this whole area of automated technology. While you had the OEMs at the table and captured, were you able to, you know, have some of those hard conversations we've been trying to have with the OEMs around standard nomenclature and, you know, how to make automated technology more consistent? It's something you and I have discussed for a couple of years. Did you? Mm-hmm. They were there. Did you ask them about it? I'm sure it wasn't the same people, but that's my transition to get you to talk about automated technologies.
I can imagine. Yeah. Well, it is exactly like you say. Most of the time, those are other people.
Yeah.
But automated driving is, well, a development that the whole world is, I think, focused on and thrilled about because, you know, it's kind of a gadget and it's fun to see. Nevertheless, everybody's aware that this holds new challenges also for registration authorities. And I think we're still discovering it. And we signed a letter of intent with DMV in California. Not we as EREG, I should say, but between RDW of the Netherlands and California, to work together on these kind of topics. Because we see that the OEMs, they work globally. So if we ask them the same questions, it might be easier to come to an agreement at some point in time.
Even but more so than just the Netherlands and California, it's really, you know, all of your EREG members and all of our ANVA members really coming together to ask those similar questions, and our friends at Osroads as well. It's, you know, the OEMs are putting the same technology on all these roads.
Yeah, and I think also for road safety, there's so much to gain if we do this correctly. And of course, there are also worries, and you already talked about data protection, and sometimes also protecting the citizen because they're hardly aware of what they're giving away, basically. We're not quite sure what role this will bring to the registration authorities, but we feel that what you mentioned, the harmonization of data elements, that's something we should talk about. The ownership of the data, that's something we should talk about. It's these questions that are, I think, still open, but need answers if we want to keep safe roads with these vehicles towards the future. And of course, it's not about all the technical details of a car, because that's a different area, which is not so much covered by EREG itself. But you have to understand them to make the translation to what are we going to do about the data that we need to keep. Do we need to keep it? Or can it stay in the car, for example? Or do we need to make a register? These are questions that are open that we still need to solve.
Absolutely. So the other topic that's a similar theme and has brought our world closer together that's emerging is mobile driver's license. In many ways, it was the topic area that really built this international partnership, at least brought it to the next level. Tell us a little bit about where you see the EREG members these days in terms of, you know, the philosophies and the approach on MDL. I know you guys are very active in the ISO conversations. A number of your member countries are doing pilots, but how quickly do you see that progressing and rolling out in your members?
Like you say, I think this was actually pushed by a couple of EREG members and ANVA, Also in the ISO working group, and I think USA and Finland and UK and the Netherlands, they might have been the ones that actually pulled the hardest on this subject, which is understandable because they use it as an ID document as well. So again, looking from data protection, looking from the point of proving your idea and your capabilities to drive, it was clear that these countries had the most need. Nevertheless, we started a topic group to work on this, and that was focused not so much on the technical details, because that was covered in ISO with you guys, but on preparing the EU and the EU legislators, so the European Commission, to accept the fact that we are already almost ready to accept digital driving licenses, mobile driving licenses. And well, I already explained that the legislation process can take quite some years. Technology is, taking a different speed. So if you want to use it, you shouldn't wait too long.
Yeah.
That's why we started this topic group, and they made some recommendations. And last month, I was in a high-level meeting, and it was very nice to hear that the Commission actually had read our documents and came to the same conclusion. They said, okay, since this many countries are preparing for mobile driving licenses, maybe we should open up the legislation to make it possible. And that's something that I'm going to speak about next week, if I'm correct, with the European Commission, to see how can we work together to already prepare legislation to accept the ISO standard when it's ready. So I'm urging my colleagues in the ISO world, so come on.
Let's get it done.
Let's get it done.
Put something out there. I understand. So, Suri, there's a lot we could talk about, but we're running out of time, but I do want to get to one more topic, which is, of course, how this pandemic is really impacting the services that your members are delivering. That's been a big conversation in North America, is even with all these different topics and policy areas, at the end of the day, we're all public agencies that have to issue credentials to our citizens, to the public, and have to be a public face of government. Especially in Europe, where you see different nations with different approaches to lockdowns and not lockdowns and, you know, curtailing other activities. At the risk of overgeneralizing, how has the pandemic impacted the actual delivery of services to folks in Europe?
Yeah. That's not such an easy question to answer, to be honest.
Of course not.
Because like you said, this is something that is not regulated, so every country does it itself. And what we've seen is very different reactions from different parts of Europe. But the biggest question is, of course, how can you keep a distance in a car? That was one of the first things that came up. And then you think, okay, what do we have to do with that? Yeah, but then people start developing solutions, and all of a sudden you're in the road safety domain. Well, we have seen countries taking different approaches, from putting in screens in the car. And some thought it was a good idea. Others thought, oh no, this is dangerous, because once the car crashes,
you have another object.
What do you do then? Exactly. So we've seen different countries taking different measures. We had, of course, the service delivery for technical inspections, for example. Well, we had to find ways there as well. I mean, how do you protect your own personnel, for example? Because they have to look at the car, get into contact with people and stuff like that. Well, again, I think everybody does that, again, in their own way. I know in the Netherlands, RDW actually, for example, made half shifts. So they had, you know, an A team and a B team. So that if one gets affected, the other team is not affected. Everybody tried to come up with practical measures to make sure that the service delivery went on. And we quite succeeded to do that. Especially, the first thing was about import of cars, because they have to be checked before they can come in the country. Well, we changed our processes, for example. Normally, people would have to go directly first to the inspection station and do their thing over there. Now we said, okay, for the big traders, for example, we said, okay, maybe we make a digital process for you. And then we check afterwards instead of upfront. So we tried different ways of coping with the basically the restrictions that were there because of the lockdowns or semi-lockdowns or whatever countries had. And we actually made a webinar about it. I think if you want, you can find an impression on the ERH website, which gives you a bit of an idea.
Okay.
Where the UK and Finland and Portugal explained what they have done to cope with the first wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen now. And we're all in the middle of a second wave. You and Europe as well, of course. Let's see how it goes. We found a way. We adapted some processes to keep delivering our services. What we couldn't affect, of course, is basically things like the income, the revenues of the agencies. And that's different over Europe as well. Some are paid directly by the government. Some have to earn their money through the products that they actually sell to the citizens. And, well, the car sales dropped down. Not as much as we expected, so that was good. But still, it dropped. So I can see that quite some of the ERH members are, you know, refocusing because the budgets declined. And that's something, well, running a network is something you have to take into account as well, because, well, you can only spend your money once.
Right.
And then you still have to balance that. Knowledge exchange, most of the time, is not on the top of the list.
That's a good recap.
And maybe it's good to stress, there's one thing like to add. Next year, we hope to organize a new global summit, which was the first time started in Australia. I hope that over there, we can look at these subjects that we just discussed from a more global perspective. That would be really nice. Let's see if we can make that happen. And there's one of the spin-offs of that meeting was the make a vehicle chain, which is an overview of all the registration processes in Europe. And they are different between countries, like I already explained. Australia did the same, and we're hoping that we could do something of the same for the US. So we have, at least for the Western world, a bit of an overview about how different states, different countries actually, run their processes and deliver their services. So it gives us a bit of an understanding what's going on, from which we can learn. But secondly, I strongly believe in, if you take over the best practices, you get a sort of de facto standardization. And I think that's good for all the citizens.
Absolutely.
So that would be good. And the second one is an offer I always do. If you have any questions or you want to know something about Europe, just contact us. I mean, we're glad to help.
I really appreciate you spending some time with us today. You know, as we continue to develop this international partnership, it's great for folks to get to know each other on both sides. And I hope that some of our North American members, by listening to this, will understand a little more about ERG, Eucharist, what's going on in Europe, and we'll, keep unpacking this conversation and building a partnership. And as I know, you're always the first to say, hopefully soon we'll be able to do it again in person. You've been, you've made that commitment to travel over here to multiple annual international conferences of ours here in North America. And we'll look forward to being together again soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Ian.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in for this episode. I want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we will see you all on the next AmbaCast. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for AmbaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode has been brought to you by Get Group. Visit us at ambacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.